Hold on to your butts.
Let's get ready to
ramble.
What's up, my fellow geeks? Welcome to a new episode of the Rambling Geek Podcast, the show where two geeks ramble about geek stuff. This week, we have our very first guest on the show who will be joining in on the rambling, and then we'll put up a guest spotlight on our website if you want to learn more about him after the show. I'll chuck it a link into the episode notes so you can click there and go read all about our guest. Right, our guest is a comic book writer, artist, creator, whose work has been featured in a wide variety of Simpsons comics, Simpsons-related comics. He did a fill-in issue of Scotty Young's Image Comics series, I Hate Fairyland. He create, wrote, and drew his own series through Action Lab Comics called Itty Bitty Bunnies in Rainbow Pixie Candyland, and a follow-up, Itty Bitty Bunnies Cavalcade of Contraband. Outside of comics, he's released his own books, Baby's First Exorcism, Poetry of the Geek, and Be Batman, the unofficial superhero's guide to overcoming adversity, and currently is the illustrator of the all-ages book series, Timmy the Ticked-Off Pony. Casting to the pod from across the ditch in Australia, we welcome to the show Mr. Dean Rankin.
Hey, thanks for having me. All the way from sunny Melbourne I'm coming from.
Nice. Is it actually sunny? Because it's not sunny here.
It actually is sunny today. We've had a nice day.
Very good. How are you?
I'm good. We've been in we're kind of easing restrictions a little bit now. We've been in lockdown for a long time here in Melbourne. Mm-hmm. And so I think we've all gone a little bit stir crazy. This has been recorded on the day of the outcome of the US election, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, a little bright light.
Yeah. And so yeah, it's like, I don't know, suddenly I have a little bit of hope. It's been a long year, and so it's nice to have some, you know, some nice news occasionally. So we've had to stay within 5 kilometers of our houses, and now we're able to, then that was lifted to go to 25K, but now we can go anywhere in Victoria. So that's kind of nice. So we'll be able to actually see family and friends, you know, that aren't so close to us.
Yeah, that's really good, because you guys were the most strongly locked down, weren't you, in Victoria?
Yeah, we were the we had the highest numbers in Australia, and we had the strictest lockdown, which obviously was really, really needed. We were starting to blow out as far as numbers goes, but we've had, I think this is the 8th day of zero numbers for Melbourne, which is pretty extraordinary given how bad we were.
Yeah, that's really good. Mm. So is Victoria still locked down, though? You can't go out of the state?
You can't go out of the state, no. It's just what it means now. We had a lockdown for Metro Melbourne that we couldn't go out to regional Victoria, but so now we can. So yeah, it's been, you know, it's been a thing. Like, I don't know, I'm looking forward to being able to now sit down in a restaurant, which is kind of cool. You can go to a bar. I really need to go to the barber. My beard's just going, like, I don't know, I look like full hillbilly, you know. I really need to get a trim, but I can't do it myself. So so things have been grim.
I did see a picture on Instagram of the beard, and it's a pretty good beard, though.
Yeah, it's pretty beardy. So.
Yeah, it is. It's voluminous. It's very good.
So it wasn't like very a new good. Hobby, Dean, while you're in lockdown, is growing the beard.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think can I plait it? Can I dread it up or something like that? You know. So yeah, it's been a weird year.
I was going to go with the spider pig reference there, and oh, you have so many looks, and that's a fairly feeble Simpson segue, is it not?
Yeah, well, that's I guess that's what brought you to the party, right? The doing those books.
Yeah. So that was I'm trying to think, a bit over 10 years ago now. I scored the Simpsons comics, Yeah, so that was a real life changer for me. That was suddenly meant like I could go to, you know, be invited as a guest to conventions. People assume that they know what I'm doing because I've done the Simpsons comic books. And so that's been really nice. Also, just even still, like the fandom around the Simpsons, it's such a nice fan kind of group. It's not, you know, some fandoms are a little bit toxic, but the Simpsons guys are always, you know, really lovely. The only hard part is sometimes at conventions, people will come up to me and quote the Simpsons lines, and I'm a fan of the show and I've watched heaps of it, but I don't really retain that kind of knowledge. So they'll come up and, I don't know, some random thing about, I don't know, monorails or something and assume that I would know what they're talking about.
Oh, that's a great episode.
That is a good episode.
You see, I've asked Brian this before and he can't answer, but do you actually have a favourite episode or we just like them all?
Yeah, no, I do have a favourite episode. It's the Lisa the Vegetarian episode where the do you remember that one where Homer's cooking a pig, the barbecue, and it flies off in the air and it's still good, it's still good? That's my favourite episode.
Yeah, that's good. Nice. That's quite an early episode, isn't it?
It is, yeah, yeah. Look, we would watch it. It would be on like 6 p.m. on one of our stations over here, like weekdays, and everyone would watch it. You just, you know, that's what you did. And so when it went over to, I think it's like a streaming service, that kind of meant, you know, you couldn't quite watch, unless you had that service. It was like, it went over to Foxtel or something. And if you didn't have it, then you couldn't watch it. But now it's on Disney Plus. So I have been rewatching it. And just before, my son was watching episodes, which is kind of nice. It's nice that some. Has such a longevity.
Yeah, really, those old episodes especially, I think.
Yeah, look, the new ones get bagged a bit, but I have to say, like, I'm not as across the new episodes anyway, so I can't really say if they're better or worse. It's just sometimes it's about just not having the time to dedicate to watch everything that's going.
From that point of view, then, it's pretty cool that it wasn't a prerequisite then to be a mega fan, to be, you know, drawing them.
Exactly right.
You just need the models and then here's the script and then, not to say away you go, like it's easy, but it's pretty cool to have that kind of freedom, I guess.
Well, yeah, look, they didn't even give me model sheets and I wrote all my comics, for ones I did for The Simpsons.
Yeah.
And there's this really nice handbook about how to draw Simpsons. So I use that basically as my Bible. When I started, it's really weird looking back at my old work. It wasn't on model at all, but I was still getting work. But my theory was if I can be more on model, then there's more of a chance for me getting work. I have no idea how I scored the gig, to be honest. I just sent some work off years ago and they said yes to it. And yeah, I'm still floored by how lucky I was.
It's that easy, folks. Send it in.
Just like that. Of course, the comics aren't around anymore, so you kind of missed your chance. But, it was such a – yeah. Also, I was 38, which by the time – like, I'd been drawing comics for, like, 20 years just to get it to a point where I was bearable, like, just passable. So I was just – I'm just very fortunate that they saw something in my work that resonated with them, I think. So, yeah.
I think there's still a chance, 38.
Let's hope for you, Mike. Yeah. Not for me. Yeah. I can't draw anything, but I read a lot. That'll do. I'm your audience. Write and draw for me.
Yeah, close enough.
Go on then.
Yeah, well, comics have writers, dude, so that's the thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you don't have to be both.
True.
Yeah, so, because then obviously, was it Bongo Comics went under or closed down? Or
yeah, they kind of closed down, so it was – I think 2 years ago I went to San Diego and I got to like sign at the Bongo booth and it was really cool. And it was at that convention that the news came out that they weren't going to continue. I had a bit of a vibe beforehand. My work was starting to dry up and things were getting quiet. And I thought, I'm not sure if it's going to make it any longer. So it was just, you know, it was a nice run. I did about 10 years of work with them, mainly doing backup stories, shorter stories, but still at Simpsons and like, so certainly I'm the only Australian to have worked on Simpsons. I think probably, you know, the only person in the Southern Hemisphere who scored it. So that was, you know, yeah, something that I feel really blessed for getting. And so, yeah, and also I guess I made the most out of it. Like, you know, I'd tell people at bus stops I worked on Simpsons comics, you know, that I kind of ran with it. I do remember, like, after the first one they published, I thought, oh, what if that's it? What if I didn't get to do one Simpsons comic? And that would be, you know, kind of heartbreaking, but fortunately for me, I scored some more. So, yeah, it was really nice. And something that I've always haven't taken for granted for, if you know what I mean, and I've always tried to, this is only going to be dicky, try to be a good ambassador for that comic, you know, for that IP, because I love it, and I wanted to do the best by it. So yeah,
I don't think anybody will doubt that. I mean, look at your conventions. I mean, your go to commissions are Simpsonizing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so at conventions I draw people like they were Simpsons characters. So that's been really interesting this year. So last year I did 15 conventions, and this year I got 2 in before lockdown hit. So, yeah, it's going to be some time before I think, you know, certainly this country will be out and about again. I know you guys are in a much better position, but, yeah, it's going to be a while before we'll be doing that again.
Yeah, well, we've got travel open to Australia, but not to Victoria, obviously.
Hanging out for that, because I'm a huge fan of Supernova in general. I could sing the praises of Supernova all day, but Melbourne's always been my favourite of them. I've been across three times I've been over now, and I'd like to get around all of them. But you know, obviously, nothing's happening at the moment with travel. But
no,
yeah. I was interested to get your take on it, kind of thing. We just had our Armageddon here, the big one that we have, which is the Auckland one, happens on our Labour weekend, which is a couple back here, and because it was all, I guess, internal and onshore, you know, little to no offshore guests, they went ahead with it anyway. And I noticed that Supernova had essentially cancelled for the year to kind of, I don't want to say maintain the integrity of the brand or the experience or whatever. I'm not quite sure what the overall reasons would be, but it must be really frustrating to not be able to get there as a fan and as an artist, I guess.
Yeah, it is. It's been, and I was at Armageddon Auckland last year. I think that's where I caught up with you guys.
Yeah.
I saw all the pictures of it. I was sad to not be there. But I don't think it would necessarily be, like, I can't speak on behalf of Supernova or the other conventions, but I don't think it's necessarily we don't have enough talent here to run a show if it was purely for, you know, for local people, local guests. I think we do, but there's quite strict restrictions across the board about how many people can be in a building.
Okay, that makes sense, yeah.
So, and certainly, well, you know, even from Melbourne, like, there's no way I could have gone interstate anyway. But I think that they, yeah, again, I can't speak on their behalf, but I think it's possible to run a convention with only local Australian people. There is there's a pool of comic artists who work on some very large, you know, brand kind of known properties. You know, there's authors, there's actors, and, you know, who've worked on lots of very nice, you know, genre stuff, that I think it's doable. And it might be something that they might explore down the track if our borders sort of remain closed. But yeah, again, I can't speak on their behalf, but I think it is possible to run it. And I don't think necessarily it was purely because they can't get international guests, but the rules are quite strict. We just couldn't get, you know, you couldn't have enough people to actually run the show.
Yeah, to keep it safe and all that kind of thing. It's a good call. I'd never say that it wasn't a good call to, you know, to make that for the right reasons. Mm. You know, there's bigger things than geek stuff. It's an odd thing to say on this podcast, but, you know, it's
blasphemy.
I know. You're going to fire me, aren't you?
No, I do that on the other podcast.
You do it on a regular basis, yeah. Not me yet, but give it time.
So, yeah. So, look, you know, so I think, yeah, there was a number of times, I think there's a few of the larger conventions tried to put dates down for this year, but it just wasn't going to happen.
No.
So, yeah, so maybe next year.
Make the vibe for the next time it is possible to spin one up. It's going to be great.
Mm.
I mean, not the same scale. You know, Mike, you were mentioning just before, but a table sale, just a toy sale that I went to yesterday here in Auckland, and just the appetite for people to be out and just doing something geeky and talking to people about, you know, toys or comics or action figures, things like that. You know, people are really hanging out for just being able to get out and do something normal, I think, and sort of indulge your hobby, indulge your passion, if you like, to stretch a phrase. Mm. Yeah, it's pretty cool to be out in that kind of thing. And you end up, even if you're not buying anything, you're standing around at a table for 20 minutes just talking with people who are of like mind and are allowed out of the house. Mm. You know, it's pretty cool to be able to get back out into that. You know, it's been a long time coming, and you guys will be in the same boat, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I remember that my first convention, I flew up for Sydney Supernova just as a punter, and I remember thinking, oh, these are my people. And to not have that for so long, to not have that connection is I think it's been difficult. But, yeah, and part of me, though, I don't know. I don't know if I'm getting institutionalized or being home. I'm kind of stressed with the idea of going out back out there in that kind of environment, but we'll see how we go.
Yeah, just have to sort of ease into it. I think that's a good thing over here. They would sort of drop the levels bit by bit and start increasing it slowly. But also everyone wanted to get out, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get to a point where you kind of have to. And in fairness, you know, we've got a much smaller population. I mean, what's the population of Victoria?
I don't know. Or,
you know, I mean, what have we got? What, 5 million in New Zealand now? You know, it's
something like that. Yeah.
You know, it's a couple of small islands.
Yeah.
Comparatively speaking, you know, it's a little easier to run through the levels, go through the gears, I guess, and to be able to get back out into it. And, you know, we're all nervous when we came out of full lockdown as well, because it's just, I think it's just human nature, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've had it quite easy over here, to be honest, because we shut it down pretty quick. Yeah, and then sort of took the necessary precautions and then sort of mostly got over it as much as you can pretty quickly compared to other countries. So, I mean, yeah, we haven't had it as bad as probably most countries.
And even Australia, we haven't had it as bad as most countries either. Mm. I think our highest days were, 700 and, in Victoria, and oh, my God, that's just too many. And then you see this, the United States, 130,000 or something like that yesterday.
That's insane numbers,
aren't they? It's mind-boggling. So, it's upbeat. I've already dragged the podcast down, haven't I?
This is our coronavirus special.
I think we should be talking to the New Zealand Tourism Board and just saying, hey, we're just really plugging how cool it is to be in Australia and New Zealand. Come on down.
Yes, you can. Yeah.
Come to a Supernova on the podcast. Anyway.
Yeah, that was the sad thing because we had preliminary discussions, me and Brian, about me possibly joining you to go over to a Supernova.
Oh,
because I've never done it. And and Armageddon has sort of drifted very far away from being a comic convention. It's a very small part of it now. Mm. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah.
And so I was quite looking forward to coming over to a convention that does have still a decent comic presence.
Yeah, well, certainly like Melbourne, like Brian was saying, Melbourne particularly is a really solid artist alley, which it kind of surprised me going to the New Zealand convention that there's not really that. So, I mean, there's artists and there's creators, but there's not quite as many, and you don't really have a big artist alley kind of area, which is kind of sad. It's kind of sad because there's really some, fantastic, New Zealand comic creators out there. But, in saying that, though, sometimes something like a convention, not every kind of style goes well at a convention. You have to kind of find your spot in it. When I think about New Zealand creators, I kind of think, more of a sort of indie creators, more indie styles, So,
I wonder just to, again, as not an artist, I guess just a consumer, if you like. I don't know whether you find that that's kind of different styles culturally. There's a question in here. I'll try and frame it. You've been to Artist Alley at the Supernovas, Dean, and I agree that just some amazing stuff happening in there. And we've got terrific artists here in New Zealand, including Mike, of course. But I always find that, and whether it's an Australian vibe versus a New Zealand vibe, but the Artist Alley in Australia, the artists always seem to be more forward and more outgoing, not sort of, dragging people to their tables, but always it's kind of more engaging. If you know what I mean, we seem to be a little reserved here, and that doesn't help to maybe make some of those connections that you'll get. I mean, I've seen you at your table, and a couple of times I've been coming to talk to you, and I couldn't get near your table because you're up and you're talking and you've got people around you. Do you know what I mean? And there's just more of a kind of an outward energy to it.
I find that really, really draining in some ways as well. I feel like I'm being rude to everybody, but because I'm ultimately an introvert. But in that scenario, you have to be extroverted. Yeah, I think yes to your answer. I think that there is a sort of different characteristics. I think you'd find that there are plenty of pretty shy comic creators out there who don't do very well within the context of a convention. You have to, like I was saying, you have to find your niche. And I think for me to be doing so, like Simpsons character caricatures of people, basically, is what I do. I'm always having to have someone in front of me that I'm drawing. And if there's someone there in front of your table all the time, it kind of draws a crowd, excuse the pun, that people go, oh, what's going on over there? And there's a certain amount of, you know, energy that happens within that context. Sure. But other artists, they might just take a bunch of commissions and just plug away at them throughout the weekend. But my style is very much I have to engage people when they're there. I've been kind of really conscious of that. I've tried to think about what is needed for that particular job. But to be a comic creator is a very isolated kind of thing. You have to spend a lot of time by yourself doing your art. But in that context, it's very much, I think, you kind of like carny folk, you have to put on your particular brand of show. Also, I want to add as well, sometimes with a supernova, for instance, or Comic Con or Armageddon, you might find a lot of people rock up, but they may not really read comics. They might be superhero fans. They might know all the characters from X-Men movies or the MCU, but they may not necessarily read comics. So if you're not working on a known property, you're having to sell that as well. And again, that's not necessarily for everyone.
Yeah.
I do really badly at those indie, I don't know if you guys have got like indie comic festivals where people, you know, everything's photocopied and, you know, it's more like indie styles or more autobiographical comics. I don't do well in those kind of events. I've done lots of them. And what I've really discovered is, like, you know, that's not necessarily my crowd. And I always find it interesting, just as I'm rambling here, but as comic creators, we all kind of get lopped into a kind of certain category. Like, oh, you guys draw comics, right? I always think of comics like it's like film. Like sometimes, like the filmmakers who are like really serious about their craft and they're doing a certain kind of indie art house thing, and you wouldn't necessarily say that wasn't me on the toilet, by the way, if you heard it or someone else using that. But you might like someone else are making blockbusters or someone else is making so. So even in Melbourne, for instance, you've got, I don't know, so you've got me or you've got Tom Taylor, the writer, who's working on all kinds of really interesting stuff for things like Marvel and DC, or you've got, New Zealand-born and bred Colin Wilson over here who's working for predominantly French publishers, or you've got these guys, there's a little studio called Squishface Studio, and they do basically indie stuff. And so, yes, you can lob us all together that, yes, we all make comics, but we all make very different kinds of things. And then you have to kind of pick your market about where the best place for you to sell your comics is. That's the end of my lesson. That's all I have to say. so end of my my sermon.
It's a proper rambling geek. Perfect.
Yeah. So I always think with conventions as well, it's like it's not really just one convention happening. It's a thousand. It just happens to be all at once. Like some people will go, I'm really here for the comic artists. Mm-hmm. But others have no interest in the comic artists. Even though I might have Comic-Con written in the title, have no interest in comics, but they might be really into the voice actors or the TV personalities or whatever.
Yeah.
And or they might just be there for the toys, or you know, just to be there to, you know, soak up the atmosphere. So it's kind of a bit of a shotgun thing going on. So I guess as creators, if someone's walking past your table and you're not selling any comics, it's not about you as a creator. It's not about you as a personality, you know, putting yourself out there. It might just not be interested in comics.
Can I swing back a couple of minutes? Colin Wilson, now 2000 AD alum, I think is probably the right phrase for that. Mm. If 2000 AD come knocking on your door, would you do it? And if you were going to choose, what would you do? If you could choose.
Yeah, well, first and foremost, I can't draw like that. I can't and don't draw in a serious kind of way. So I would love to work on as a writer, and I've submitted, I don't know, countless. They have this Aftershock thing. It's like a 4-page comic submission that you send the script off.
All right.
And I've sent countless things to them and never heard back.
Okay. Wow.
But yeah, you'd want to look at. I would love to do, obviously, Judge Dredd, but I really, as a kid, I really like Strontium. Is it Strontium Dog? Is that the pronunciation?
Oh, Johnny Alpha, classic.
And so that, you know, that would be, you know, kind of, even Slane, that would be kind of cool. It's been a long time since I picked up 2000 AD, but that's kind of like, is it ABC Warriors? You know, those
ABC Warriors, yeah, the robots, yeah, all
the, you know, robots. So those, kind of, all of that, yeah. So that's kind of, yeah, that's kind of my ilk. Who was the guy with a really long nose? He's like a necromancer.
Oh, Nemesis the Warlock.
Nemesis the Warlock.
You'd be all over that.
So the short answer is basically anything that they would throw at me, I would happily take a shot at. But yeah, as far as drawing goes, I can't draw like that. So I have very cartoony style. I'm never going to be able to draw Batman or anything like that. So that's why I kind of target and choose projects that, you know, fit my style. There's no point. Yeah,
I guess in the old days they used to do this is way back in sort of probably early 80s, late 70s. I guess they occasionally would do like a one page story. And it'd be Captain Clip, I think, which actually came across from Tornado, and that was like a parody of a superhero.
Oh, right.
And it was more of a cartoony style, or there was guys like Brendan McCarthy, I think, was doing stuff, you know, these really weird things in the 90s, always one pages, and I could really see you doing something like that if they ever went back to that kind of idea within 2018. I've not picked up a new one probably in well over 10 years, so yeah. I don't know what's in there these days, but yeah, from a classic point of view, you know, a Tharg's Future Shock or something like that. I'm really surprised that they've not come back to you. It's a shame.
I felt like what I was sending off was pretty solid, but they've stopped the submissions now since COVID hit, and you know, I'm still hopeful. And like I do, like say when I'm submitting for projects, I don't generally just go, I'll send off one and just ignore it. I generally go, okay, well, 6 months later I'll try again, and then I'll try again, because you kind of have to like raise your head above the crowd a little bit. And I always think you have to be kind of brave. That kind of goes against my grain to be, oh my God, am I being rude or whatever? But
like a New Zealander now.
Like a New Zealander, right? This is it. I live in the wrong country. That, you know, and like the same with, you know, same with you guys. Like, all sort of, you're self-depreciating. Oh, there's all these better people better than me and blah, blah, blah. But you have to be a little bit different. I'm not, you know, you don't have to be rude, but you have to be consistently, you know, pester. Mm-hmm. And so I did a cover for Rick and Morty, and without a lie, I think it took me 3 years for them to
really
get, yeah. So, you know, so I would, you know, they opened up for submissions or send it in, then not 6 months on track, and then they go, oh, I hear you're doing Rick and Morty. Could you please pass this on to the editor? Blah blah blah. It was, and I, you know, I was hoping to get more stuff from them, but I only got the cover. But yeah, that's how it goes. It's not pretty. and you really do have to keep pushing, and it doesn't matter how busy I am with work, I do tend to keep scrounging. I always think about it, for me, it's like the hustle and the grind. I'm hustling for work, and I'm grinding out at, you know, working hard at the same time. It's not a, yeah, it's not glamorous. It's kind of like what, you know, the conventions, for instance, are really nice. You get to be real, you feel really special. You sell autographs and, you know, you sell comics, all the kind of stuff. But the actual day-to-day work component is really different than that.
Yeah, yeah. So I was going to say what you were saying before, that, you know, you could never draw Batman or whatever. But, yeah. You know, and this is maybe a high bar to use as a reference, but in the 90s, I think it was, Sergio Aragonés was doing those, you know, those Destroys DC, and I think he did a Marvel one and a Star Wars one as well. And those are brilliant. It's just a nice, sometimes you want something different, you know?
Yeah, exactly right. And, like, they have, like, you know, it's like, people, you can talk about Sergio Aragonés, and you can talk about, say, Scotty Young, and you go, okay, these guys kind of next level, and they've kind of been able to transition to that kind of their more cartoony style, you know, into that. But that's kind of few and far between, and I don't know. I would, you know, in some it would be nice, but in some ways, I would prefer to be able to work in my wheelhouse and solidly get work, so that, you know, I aim for things like that. I did, like, in some a couple of pages for Invader Zim that fits really well with my style, and
yeah, that would.
I just think it would just annoy people if I'm sending stuff to editors that, oh, you know, hey, look how well I draw The Simpsons. Can I please draw Doctor Doom? You know, it just doesn't quite translate very well. So that's the, you know, and I guess the main thing for me, like, I'm trying to survive. I'm trying to pay the bills. And so I need to kind of aim for things that I think there's a, you know, a reasonable chance of me getting.
Yeah, I guess it's pretty cool that you can actually, I guess the styles that you can get are a little broader these days. Maybe, I mean, if you look at someone like Scotty Young, I mean, Sergio Aragonés, he was doing those little cartoons in the Mad magazine, which I loved when I was a kid. Mm. You know, the little marginal cartoons, it just cracked me up. Yeah. But, you know, in the 80s, you'd never have got a Scotty Young style anywhere near a mainstream book.
No.
You know, and it's much more open to that kind of thing now to be able to do that, where it's much more rigid from what was just on the shelf then.
Yeah, that's right. And I do like things like, you know, the birth of, like, Cartoon Network and CalArts, you know, those kind of styles. I think that's changed, you know, a lot. And I think it's allowed room within comics to have those, you know, more sort of cartoony stories. But yeah, I still don't think they sell as well as kind of the mainstream superhero fare, but there is space. And that's all I want. I want to be able to find my little space within that context to be able to work.
Yeah. It's a shame they don't sell so well, because it's so much fun. That kind of style, you know, there's only so far you can go with over-muscled superheroes before it's, yeah, I've seen this one.
Yeah, that's it. So, yeah, I don't know. If I'm reading comics, I predominantly do read that kind of style, like, you know, Immortal Hulk, all those kind of things. I do like to read those kind of comics. But it's just very much like who I am as a person. Like, you know, I was raised on, you know, Saturday morning cartoons. Those were my influences. Drawing cartoony makes me happy. When I'm trying to force myself to be, you know, be more serious, and I can get away with it to a point, that it's not like I'm not being true to myself. I don't, you know, I don't get the same kind of joy of, you know, I don't know, doing some kind of, like, you know, pony, you know, shitting itself or something, compared to, yeah, that more serious fare.
Yeah, I feel like when you, not you personally, but in general, when you try to draw what you think is wanted or something that's not natural to your normal style, it also puts a bit more stress on your mindset. I don't know how to explain it. So when you're drawing, you're stressing out a lot more, like, oh, that part's not right, that part's not right.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's your own style, you're like, well, it's right if I make it right, you know. So
there's something really nice about that. That's interesting. Yeah, I do tend to, like, these days, even though I'm still cartoony, all my work seems to be aping other people's styles now. Like, I was doing a lot of work for American Mythology. They were doing Oggy and the Cockroaches and Underdog and those type of things. And so that I can kind of push my way into that. But you're right, I do have to be really, you have to be conscious of styles. And I'm working on a really large graphic novel at the moment, but it's not my, it's still cartoony, but it's not my, you know, specific style. So that's been really interesting to try and just bend my head around it.
Those American mythology ones are quite cool licenses to be able to get a chance to do as well.
I mean, you know, for like, you know, I don't know, again, I'm old, like, but having like to be able to work on, you know, so like a Rocky and Bullwinkle or something like that. I was like, oh, man, you know, 8-year old Dean would have been, you know, losing his shit over it, you know.
Well, probably adult Dean too, right?
Yeah, yeah, well, truth be told.
Oh, man. So, yeah. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Because you were doing, didn't you do, or maybe just covers or something for Laurel and Hardy as well?
Yeah, I was doing, I did Laurel and Hardy meet the Three Stooges, Laurel and Hardy Christmas something, and I did, recently I did Robotic Stooges, which is based on an old Three Stooges thing where they have like robotic powers. They're kind of like, I don't know, like Go-Go Gadget kind of thing that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was a, you know, super old animated cartoon. But, yeah, I do like those kind of retro styles as well.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, like aping other people's styles has helped me as an artist, I think. When I was, before Simpsons, for instance, if you ever saw my anatomy, not saying it's good now, but it was all over the place. You know, I'd have like eyes on top of eyes and, it was all very indie and it was still fun, but I kind of had to, Simpsons taught me, you know, sometimes you actually have to learn how to draw.
Dream shattered. No, there's no
chance. Yeah. You can only fake it so long. And even now I'm really sort of conscious of, oh, man, why didn't I concentrate in art school?
I have that thought every day.
You talk yourself up. Yeah, so I'm a comic book artist, and then some days you can't draw a circle. So.
I tell myself it's because I didn't like drawing still life fruit. It wasn't my jam, but probably should have paid attention.
Yeah, so apparently you need that.
I hear of you now that someone who can barely hold a pencil straight, and you guys are complaining because you can't quite get the eyes right. Really? That's just the biggest problem you've got.
Yeah. Well, also it's like I think the more you draw, the more you're aware of your shortcomings. Okay. I think, you know, our biggest issue is that as creators, we compare ourselves to other people, other artists, and then we compare ourselves, you know, in our minds, we have an image of how we want it to be, and then when it comes on paper, we don't reach that. And so you're kind of constantly frustrated. So, life of artists, constantly frustrated and anxious that you're doing it wrong.
It's true, though, because, and not just because you're on the show, but I do that constantly when I see your art. I'm just like, damn it. Like, how did you draw that? Or, you know, comparing. I was reading the Ticked Off Pony book yesterday. Yeah. And obviously it's super heavy with your art through it. And yeah, the whole time I was just like, oh, he can draw everything. Like, how does he draw these cars? How does he draw this? And it's constant comparison going, oh, well, I'll just go back to podcasting. I'm done. Yeah. So it's true, though. It's true.
If I've done anything, it's purely from luck. Don't worry. I didn't mean
that. You're also right, because the more you do it, you can pick out your shortcomings thing you said. And that's true, because we went to an Armageddon a few years ago, Brian and I, and Jim Lee was there.
Yeah.
And someone asked him that question. He said he can go through every issue, page, panel, and tell you where something's wrong or not up to his standard or whatever, it's quite interesting.
Yeah, you think of like you know, he's like bulletproof. You think there's nothing that he can't draw or nothing that's, you know, that – and it's a bit soul-destroying when you go, if he feels like that, what the hope do the rest of us have?
Mm-hmm.
But I do try to not dwell too much on it. I go, I've got this page to do, and draw this page, and I'm not going to think too much about it. I'm going to go on to the next page. You know, I'm feeling like, this graphic novel I'm working on, I'm super anxious about it. And my motto has been, your job isn't to judge it, it's to draw it. That I have to be able to just, you know, turn you know, something off and just focus on the drawing and go, okay, that's one page. I'm going to go on to the next one now and not beat myself up, because I think it would just be an emotional wreck otherwise.
Who's the graphic novel for? Who's it through? Because we're up for a shameless plug at any time on here.
It hasn't been announced yet, but it's the second book in, it's called The Riverdale Diaries, and it's the Archie characters in middle school. So, which is really, you know, really, really cool. So I'm getting to draw, like, you know, Veronica and Betty and Archie and Jughead and all that kind of stuff, but they're kind of like, you know, as younger kids. And
that's cool.
So this is it, and you go, oh, gee, that's really cool. And I'm aping somebody else that, like, the original artist style of the first book, and it was really, really good. And so it's like, oh, they should have got someone else to do it. And but no, I can't, you know. But you know, so I don't know. It's that you kind of that feeling. Oh, I just don't know if I'm making it. I'm feeling, you know, as time goes on, I'm getting better with the style, but it's, yeah, I'm freaking out. So I don't know, it's ridiculous, but it's interesting when it comes to, you know, as a kid, all I wanted to be, like, I wanted to be successful. I wanted to, you know, I love being able to say, oh, I've worked on this and this and this. But when you're actually working on it, if it's something that's really well known, I think that does add another kind of layer of anxiety and pressure on ourselves, you know. So, yeah, I'm certainly feeling it. This is like, you guys are going, oh, my God, we're never going to have a guest on again. They talk about, you know, viruses and, you know,
No.
Paranoid and, like, you know, anxious.
No, to be honest, I think that's true. That it's like, you know, you, even me, I'm not a professional artist in any sense of the word. So, even for me, who just draws pictures for Instagram and things, it's like I'll scrap pictures that I've spent a couple of hours on because who cares? Like, nobody knew it existed, you know, because I didn't post it. Just because I think one thing's wrong or I can't get one thing right on the picture. But then there's other pictures I post and I see the issues afterwards, but nobody has cared because they haven't seen the issues that you think are there, you know. And
You and I have been friends for donkey's years, Mike. I can't remember how long it is. It's a long time. And that's one thing that I'm going to be honest with you, is always frustrated. I mean, I've told you this before anyway. You always seem to me to be your own biggest critic.
I think
and you'll be looking at stuff and pointing stuff out, and I'll be going, I don't see it.
Yeah.
And again, it's the reader eye. It's not the artist eye, and I get that. But I look at it and I go, this is amazing. This stuff is fantastic. You know, I'd love to have this hanging on the wall kind of thing. And I guess maybe it's in the DNA of all of you guys. You say Jim Lee does it. Maybe it's just, it's a prerequisite of being a comic book artist, being a cartoonist.
Also, I think that's really important. For me, I guess it doesn't stop me from doing it.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I guess that would be I'm sermonizing again. My word of advice to anyone, don't let it stop you from submitting work. You've got it, like, that's, you know, you can hate your art, you can hate yourself, but you still have to be able to keep going, I think. You know, I think that's the, you know, if you go, oh, I'm not going to submit because I wouldn't like it, that becomes an issue. I think all these people come up to me at conventions, they show me their sort of sketchbooks, and without a lie, they all draw better than I do. They draw better than I do, and, like, you know, you go, why, you know, I shouldn't be on this side of the table, but I guess what the difference is purely that I'm stubborn, like, that, you know, that I've got all these issues, but I still, this is what I love to do. I want to draw and I want to be successful at it. So I'll just keep plugging away. And actually, it grieves me when I say these young artists, you know, look, beautiful work, but draw some pages. It's like, you want to draw, you know, if you want to draw comics, you have to draw pages. It's about storytelling. It's not just about, you know, they'll create these characters in this world and then they don't do anything with it. It's just, you know, it drives me nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. One of my favorite movies to watch is a documentary called I Know That Voice, which is a voice acting one, and it's
I need to watch that. Yeah,
John DiMaggio, you know, Bender from Futurama and all of that, and an amazing voice actor. And it's interviews with and sound bites from people who do voice acting. It's absolutely fantastic. Anybody, if you've never seen it, hunt it out. Anybody listening, absolutely go and get it. And it's one that always, one little soundbite that always stands out to me, and it's one of the ladies talking about voice acting and saying, it's just people asking you the same kind of questions. You know, you've got artists coming up to you and showing you their portfolio and so forth, and they have people coming up and talking to them about voice acting. And she says, you know, someone comes up and says, oh, I can do Porky Pig, you know, or I can do Bart Simpson, all of these things. And then she says, yeah, but can you do, can you say anything in that voice? You know, it's not just can you do the tags. Could you carry on an entire conversation in that voice? And that's the difference. Maybe that's the voice version of doing sequentials, doing pages, like you say.
Yeah. I think you're spot on. I think it's very, very true. I think that, you know, when I was sending stuff off to the Simpsons, I wasn't showing them my kick-ass drawing of Bart, because I'm okay at drawing Bart. I'm not great, but I can tell a story. And I think that's the that is the difference. And I think it's an important distinction that you have to go, you know, not just draw Bart, but you have to draw, you know, Bart, you know, running away from, you know, I don't know, a giant version of his mum who's in his imagination or something like that. So, and you know, yeah, and each page you do, you get better at it. But yeah, it's a lot of work.
Yeah, that's what you've seen. I mean, you've looked at my stuff before, which is really cool of you. And you've said similar things.
You're someone who drives me nuts. That, you know, because I always love how you draw hands or you're this, and you talk yourself down. And the I would hate to see you, like, I don't know what your dreams and aspirations are, but that. I think so many. I think you. This is sorry about this, Mike. That you get in the way of yourself.
Oh, yeah, totally.
That's it freezes you. So, like, there's lots of stories that you're able to tell and could tell, but you kind of get in the way of yourself. And this is comes from someone who knows about getting in the way of themselves. But you know, so yeah, it's not that you should never question your skills, because you can do it, absolutely you can do it, but you know, I don't know if you want to, but you know, because I think it takes a certain amount of sacrifice as well, so that, you know, so I guess that's the that's the sticking point. Anyway, sorry Mike.
I feel like we almost became an episode of Michael Rosenbaum's podcast. We were getting deep.
Oh yeah. The best guy in the world, Michael Rosenbaum, by the way. So, if you ever
plug his podcast, because it's really good too.
Oh yeah. I haven't listened to it for a little while, but I listened to the initial ones. But
go and listen to the Kevin Conroy one. That's amazing. A cracker.
Yeah. Oh, is it good?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm pretty sure Michael Rosenbaum and Tom Welling are lined up for Supernova Sydney again. They were going to come this year, and I think they're already booked in for next year. So, Mike, that's one we've definitely got to put on the calendar.
I'd like to go and see Rosie.
He's the I can't speak too highly of that guy. He's the most lovely guy. Or is it one of the really nice things about being like a guest at the convention is you get to go to like the VIP parties. Yep. So there's always free booze. and I often make him fool of myself. So Michael Rosenbaum, he was at one in Brisbane a few years back. And to see him, like, it wasn't working the room. He had this, like, drive to make sure that everybody was having a good time, that he went, like, just, like, every person there, he kind of checked in and, like, it was, like, really nice to see. It's at the conventions you meet assholes as well as really nice people, but to see that kind of genuine kind of stuff happening from someone who's really well known was really sweet. So if you get a chance to head out to a convention where he's at, I'd highly recommend it.
Yeah, that it was the plan, but obviously
we'll be again.
Good friend COVID.
I did see the advert they were advertising Sydney. I thought, no, it's not going to happen, because I was at, I had just come on off the back of, we had done Melbourne and then over to Gold Coast for that weekend, and I'm going on the plane to the Gold Coast, and it's the same, like, I'm hearing about Tom Hanks has just been diagnosed on the Gold Coast. And I thought, oh, I hope we're not staying in the same hotel, which we weren't, which was good. But it's like, yeah, the whole kind of vibe is like, oh, this feels dangerous.
It's like, you know, my mum was staying in that same hotel at the same
time. Oh, is that right? Really?
Yeah. But yeah. No, she hasn't got COVID, so we're
okay. Yeah. So it's I'm just like dragging this whole thing down constantly. I don't mean to. I'm really fine. I'm a really fine, upbeat guy.
It's definitely coming across in our jokes.
Yeah.
It's all good.
I draw fun cartoony comic books, right? And definitely like hit me in bed and go, oh my God, it feels like such a grind. I kind of got to ruin the whole mystique, I think.
No, it's all been good. It's been really good. So I'm going to awkwardly segue out and just say, so I don't think we had any watching homework or anything, but have you watched anything this week at all, either of you?
Have you seen Queen's Gambit?
I thought that you might say that for some reason, and I was going to watch it last night, and then I didn't because I forgot.
That is absolutely incredible. So yeah. there's only 7 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
But that show I was watching and I was thinking, you know what, these people really care about every aspect of it. You know, the fashion of the time, is like it's like set in the 60s and like the fashion and the architecture, and it was just the cinematography and everything was just magnificent. So if anyone has, it's about playing chess. It's about this woman who's a sort of chess champion. And that was just incredible. So, yes, I would recommend that to you.
Yeah, that's high on my list of things to watch next, because that actress is the one who's been cast as Furiosa in the prequel to Fury Road.
No, really?
Yeah, she's the girl from Split and Glass.
Oh, I haven't seen that. Was that? Yeah, I haven't seen Split or Glass. Are they good?
Split I quite enjoyed. Glass was okay. Yeah, it wasn't as good as Unbreakable, but Split's good. McAvoy's really good in that. But yeah, it's that same girl. So she's going to be playing Furiosa in the prequel.
Yeah, I think she's. I can't remember her name, but she's amazing in this. And she's in the, you know, that X-Men movie that feels like
New Mutants.
New Mutants. I think she's in that.
Yeah, she's magic.
Anya Taylor-Joy. Yes. I think her name is it.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, she played Magic in New Mutants because I watched that the other night.
Oh, you've seen it?
Yeah, it was one of the ones I was saying before. I've watched stuff, but I can't bring it up because if you guys haven't seen it, I don't want to spoil it. And right. But yeah, she's in that, and she is looks wise, picture perfect to that character
from
the comics. Like, really good job character wise. But I'm not going to say anything to spoil it or anything. But it is what it is. The movie. Was it worth the wait and all the multiple delays? I don't think so, but I'm not one to tell someone what to think. So, I don't feel like I wasted however long it was, hour and a half or whatever.
Mm.
But, yeah, I don't know. It's like Dark Phoenix. Everyone crapped on that, but Brian and I didn't have any real problems with it.
Yeah, I loved it, actually.
Yeah,
I own a copy. Paid money.
I didn't go that far. All
right. I'm the completist, I have to have the full
screen.
It got bagged and bagged and bagged, and I thought, when they were making it, it's like just making The Last Stand again. Why would you do it?
Exactly.
However, I really, really liked it, and there was like a lesson to me to not listen to reviews.
Yeah.
Because, they might differ.
You go and see something or watch something, pay your money, take your chances, you either like it or you don't, I got a random one for you. I was battling a monster of a headache yesterday, and so I thought, okay, I'll just put something on, just something at random. And the Addams Family cartoon was all the animated movie, rather. Oscar Isaac, Charlize Theron, all of that. And so I watched that for an hour and a half.
And?
I enjoyed the hell out of that. I really did.
Yeah, it's good, eh?
It was really good. I really enjoyed it. And I checked sort of the trivia on and so forth on IMDb, as you do after the fact of such things, and reviews and that, and people going, oh, it's not like this. You didn't do this from Charles Addams from his cartoons way back when. And I'm going, not the point.
Yeah.
It's this version of, and it's, all the characters were there, and I thought it was funny, and it was really well animated. I had a blast watching that, yeah.
The character designs are all lifted directly from Charles Adams comics.
Mm. Yeah.
They don't look like John Aston or Roel Julia.
Or Houston or people like that. Yeah, exactly.
They're from the comics. And it is super fun. The storyline is not exactly the most original or anything. It's very in line with a lot of animated movies these days, but it's still fun.
It was a fun watch. It's really good visual gags, and the animation I thought was really nicely done, and it was just a bit of a blast, really. And for an hour and a half, you switch your mind off and watch it, and it was a good giggle. So
it got me on a real big Adams Family buzz, actually, because I started watching the old TV series.
Oh wow!
Oh,
again from the beginning, and it actually doesn't hold up too badly. Like, it's pretty funny, and I also found a copy of the old Hanna-Barbera animated series as well. And obviously, as I've told you, Brian, the Angelica Houston, Christina Ricci movies will be coming up on our podcast at some point.
Because so they should.
That's the only bit missing from my new fandom. So, it's really good, man. Like, it doesn't seem to have a massive fan base. You don't hear people talking about any type of Addams Family too much, but
it's really quiet. I was, even after watching it, I'm a bit like, I was kind of almost inclined to go back and hunt out some of the original cartoons, because I've seen one or two in various reprints and things, but I'd really like to see a lot more of it and just see where they came from. Like single panel type cartoons, I think, if I remember.
Ended
up with all of this, the TV series and movies out of it and animation and just all this grim stuff, which is all seems like a pretty cool idea.
Yeah, so that's really good. I was just trying to think what else I watched apart from New Mutants. Oh, I've been just plugging away through The Boys season 2, which I know you are not a fan of anyway, Brian.
Tried, didn't like it, moved on.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Have you seen it, Dean?
No. I'm surprised. People rave about it, so I'm surprised that it didn't resonate with you, Brian. But I haven't seen it, so I can't speak to it at all.
Is it for you, Brian? Is it because you're more of a, and this is not a negative, are you more of a traditionalist in terms of superhero stuff? You know, your Silver Age tendencies and stuff.
Pretty much, I think. Yeah, I'm a little bit more of a, I like a dark hero as much as the next man kind of thing. But I just couldn't find a hook for me. Yeah. And I'd like at least one or two likable characters. You know me, I always go on about this.
That's not the show for you then.
Right. No, and that's the thing of it. There's anti-heroes are one thing. I really want someone to sort of hang the hero hat on, and I just couldn't find it. And I went, it's cool. And to be fair, there's a lot of other stuff to watch, and if it's not that, it'll be something else. So,
Yeah. But you weren't a fan of the source material here?
No. There's a period of time there around that, the comics like that, on The Boys when it first came out, and it's just not for me, really. I know people love them, and that's cool. Just not my kind of thing, really. So,
yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
Doom Patrol is a good one, though. I think I've mentioned to you before.
You'll chip away enough. At one point, you'll get me watching it, and I'll give it a go. Give it a lash, yeah.
It's not bad. And you got anything else you want to talk about? Or do you want to plug anything, Dean, while you're here?
Be Batman, Dean. I read your book. I loved that book.
Yeah. I had serious issues with the publisher for Be Batman, and kind of it's been, I've asked for it to be shelved because people were ordering it and they weren't getting it.
Oh.
So don't order it because you may not get it. And so
I guess that's how those plugs work, Dean.
That's not how plugs are. That's a reverse plug. Yeah.
Timmy the Ticked Off Pony.
Yes, brilliant.
The book series I'm working on, written by Meta Zabansky, who you would know from Babe fame. And I don't know, do you get Kath and Kim over there?
Yeah, we do, yeah, definitely.
So Sharon from Kath and Kim.
Yep.
And she's written a book series. I've drawn 3 of them so far. Number 2 is out. So, Mike, I think you picked up number 1, didn't you? So number 2 is Bite Me, and that's pretty fun as well. It's about a famous pony, who poos himself a lot.
It's really good. It's the story's good, but man, your art is really good throughout the whole book.
So I think I even like number 2. I like it more. It's like there's some There's a couple pages there that are basically my Guernica, which is of all these ponies spewing and pooing. And so, yeah, so that's been a lot of fun to work on. But that's, I guess that's really all I'm plugging. There's a Oggy and the Cockroaches comic coming out. If you want to connect with me on social media, I'm on Facebook, and I share a lot of cat videos. So that's basically me.
That's a pretty popular genre on the internet.
Yeah.
From what I understand, yeah. Good. Okay, cool. All right. Well, as I said, we'll do a little bit of a spotlight thing. We've got a questionnaire for you to fill out, and if you've got time, when you can find time, and we'll have that up at around the same time this releases. So if you want to learn a bit more about Dean, you can do it at our website. As I said, link will be in the episode notes. And for our plugs, you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at TRG Podcast. Follow us there. You can check out our other podcast that Brian and I co-host along with our friend Clayton, the Heritage Film Club, where we take turns picking a movie for the group to watch, and we come back and chat about them. We are not film scholars or learned in any way. We just chat about whether we like them or not.
Don't talk yourself down. You know stuff.
I know. That's the whole premise of the show. Like, we wrote that into the
we know enough to fill a podcast.
Yeah. And now that Brian's nephew joins relatively frequently, he knows a bit, so it's making us sound a bit too smart for what we were going for, maybe. But we have fun. So follow that one on at Heritage Film Pod on Instagram and Facebook. And that's
at the very least, you can just come and give a comment and tell us we're wrong. That'd be cool.
That's probably a very easy thing to do on most episodes. So, yeah, feel free. For this podcast, if you are enjoying it and you want us to have more guests on, let us know. Leave us a review if you've got the time. As we always say, positive's better, but we'll take what we can get. And subscribe, please. That's the cheapest and easiest way you can support us. And well, whether you do or not, we're still going to come back. So it's just nice to spread the word. If you've got friends who like this kind of stuff, the pop culture stuff, let them know. And until next time, thanks again to our guest Dean for coming on and jamming us into your busy schedule.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
And thanks, Brian, for jumping on again.
Always a pleasure. Great chat, Dean.
So until next time, thanks for listening, and we are out.
Loved what you've heard on this week's episode? Well, the answer is simple. It would mean the world to us if you could head over to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review and feedback. Spreading the word really is the best way to grow our podcast and achieve even greater things. Thank you.
That's the end. Thanks for listening.